you for coming back on time. Let us start with revenue. And Natasha is going to do the honor of telling the board how they have reached the conclusion. So, go ahead, Natasha.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to start with a thank you to the CPS. As we near publication of the final revenue standards, the revenue team of the board would like to thank the CPS for its input over the past few years on topics such as licenses and collectability. So today we're just going to be giving you an update on where we are right now. I guess we're going through the slides. It's on the next slide, the project status plan. So in October, the board discussed a few additional topics and continued deliberations, and we'll go into a little bit more detail on those on the next few slides. The board will, however, be having a meeting later this month to confirm decisions that they made in May in regards to contingency process, the decision not to raise phones, and that no board member is intended to prevent from the publication of the standards. The effective date of January 1, 2017 remains the same, as there is still enough time to prepare for the earliest period presented. There are also no game changes with regard to transition methods to do application. The staff is in drafting mode and plans to issue the ballot draft in December and publish the standard in Q1 of 2014. So the topics of collectability, the constraints, and licenses were discussed as a result of the external review draft and recent outreach meetings. So if we go to slide 4 on collectability, the threshold that the board included in the model serves as a gate into the revenue model, and it was included as a result of the board's decision last year to present impairment as prominently as an expense instead of adjacent to the revenue line. Because the revenue and impairment lines would be physically apart on in financial statements from each other, some were concerned that revenue would be grossed up and that there was going to be a large impairment. So when assessing whether an entity is probable of collecting the consideration for which it is ultimately entitled, the entity should consider only customer credit risk and not other uncertainties. Are there any questions?
On that case, I understand that the two IESD, FID, and the finance keep the same word, that in fact means something different. That makes sense for a country.
I think that the rationale for this is that the intervention in country study is sort of the lead up to this. The reason why we put in the threshold, I think, is because of that concern about the gap between revenue and impairment. I think there was some hesitation to go above what IFRS 18 says today. IFRS 18 has a collectability of probable. So from the IFRS perspective, there was some reluctance to go above that, particularly at this stage of the project. But the SASB, they also, although I think we use the buzzword collectability as reasonably assured quite often, I think that's in the SEC literature, probable actually fits in the rest of their literature besides collectability, and I think they want to stay where their existing practice was as well. So recognize that it does mean sort of different things, but I think the other sort of factor that the board considered is that we really are talking about a small population of contracts here. Agencies don't typically enter into contracts where they don't think they'll get paid. So we're talking about a very small population of contracts. There was the desire to stay consistent with existing literature, and the difference between the two definitions should really not result in a significant reporting difference, we don't think. So if we go to the next slide for the constraint, not too much has changed here in recent months. The constraint is not meant to eliminate estimates, but instead to instill a level of confidence in those estimates before including them in the transaction price. That level of confidence has the same intended meaning in both IFRS and US GAAP, but to get to that, the board has used different words because of the established meanings of highly probable in IFRS and probable in US GAAP. So they use these different words to mean the same thing. The objective of the constraint is still to include some or all of the estimated, so would not result in a significant revenue reversal, which inherently includes the notion of minimum. The board also decided to include specific guidance for sales-based royalties for licenses of intellectual property because of the revenue recognition pattern that would result from applying the constraint to licenses of intellectual property, which they were using royalties. So what that means is making the estimate or including the minimum amount for contracts for the entity's revenues depending on the customer. The last topic that the board discussed was licenses. And here the board just confirmed their decision to differentiate between the two types of licenses. To do this, they clarified the guidance by including at the beginning of the implementation guidance emphasis on the identification of performance obligations, and also including in the implementation guidance the rationale for the intent of some of the criteria. Another way that the board decided to clarify the objective of the application of the criteria is by including additional examples.
I'd just like to comment that if I understand the latest reading book, that coming from the pharmaceutical industry and many letters from me and from my peer companies here in Europe, and I hope from the US, I think from my work in the US too, that one of the previous versions would have meant that anyone at any time going into a licensing agreement for sales based on, you know, whether the license was on future sales, we would have had to recognize some element of income. So we're pleased that, if you understand it right, the two boards saw reason, and if I understand it right, please confirm it, that only on the underlying sales being made will we have to recognize the royalty and income.
That's right. The wording, so we sort of refine the wording, but it'll look substantially the same as paragraph 85 and 2011D. So I think the wording is recognized revenue and the uncertainty related to those royalties or those sales occur.
So perhaps the benefit I know about services from the trustees, though I didn't realize until I spoke to it was a great. I'm pleased that you listened to some of our comments.
it was not easy when the board but no, I think it is even though there was some pushback saying it's an exception, but I think the boards have definitely seen the wisdom of retaining the guidance in 2011 ED. So I think it's a good outcome. Any other comments? Like to take some more compliments? So
again, the fact that we needed to have two different words to mean the same thing, I just wonder why the two boards cannot have the same word for meaning the same thing.
If I learn English from American English, I'll be fine.
It's because of the existing definition, so we need to define probable as meaning more likely than not. But the fact we define probable as something different than that, so I can't really.
It goes back to history, and
yeah,
I think so. Unless we have one standard setter which we think is the right answer, you will have this problem. You just have to live with the historical difference. Yes, Kevin.
You do the same word as the computer, if you use two different words, you get the same word.
I don't understand if someone reading financial statements are different words, and I understand that they have done the same thing for different words.
I'm very supportive of the revenue recognition code. My concern is how it balances back into IFRS 3 when I sell an asset with contingent future revenue, which I've expected to estimate that value under IFRS 3, but I'm not allowed to take that value under the new IFRS. How are we going to rationalise those? But maybe the answer is in the post-implementation review, we alter IFRS 3 to come back to this.
I may have a simple answer is to kill contingent consideration. simple deletion to me.
I do think they have slightly different objectives, so that IFRS 3 is more of a share value and revenue is a customer consideration model. And I do think that those, you know, to say that it was abusing, I do think some board members confirming something a little bit closer to fair value, but I think that we tried a number of different ways to try and get a practical solution to what we thought as an outcome. Without this requirement, without this exception, the outcomes, you know, we heard from users all over the place, but this wasn't really helpful information to them.
Well, so regular revenue is the right answer.
Tough balance.
The IFRS 3 answer, the EITF has already ruled. This is the answer. They've constrained the profit recognition on IFRS 3 following this model. Yes, it would be logical that IFRS 3 should follow that same constraint.
Yes, I think that's the point we need to pick up, as you pointed out, Kevin, in the post implementation review of the IFRS 3. And like Allison said, the models are different on the fair value, but I think at the end of the day, man on the street doesn't care about the few differences, and he wants to get a more unified answer. So I think that's a fair comment. Go ahead, Natasha.
So the last thing I want to talk about is the revenue transition group. This group is a joint effort by the IESC and the FASB to keep the revenue standards in charge of the organization. Although final details of the group have not been confirmed, it will provide a forum for discussing implementation issues of the IRS standards and will comprise a diverse group of people. The group will be limited life and will not issue authoritative guidance, as you've noted on the slide.
I think we talked at length about this when Michael was presenting. So don't take it as a personal insult. Nobody's talking any on this. We had a good discussion on this, and there is just to give you the summary of what was discussed is that people were afraid about sliding slope, whether it becomes too much getting into the weeds and getting into this thing. Second thing, I think Olivia and others have raised is the how do we keep the conversions together? Sandra has also asked the same question. The other comment was, how does it work? How do we make it happen? Is it a public session? So the points that you touched on have been discussed quite a bit. Perhaps taking the notes from them would be helpful. Any other comments on revenue? We are slightly doing good on time, and we can, before we get our research team to you, come on, any other thoughts, any other comments that you have? I think Natasha and Allison have given some idea about what are the next steps in terms of getting the standard out. I think Natasha also said something about, as of now, there is no decision to change the effective date from January 1, 2017. Any other thoughts, any other questions you have? Yes, Bob.
Again, I just had a previous meeting. It was an outstanding job by the board of getting through this. These are real minor things, just some observations. On the licensing, just a little concern that devil's going to be in the details and the ability to see those actual words before final standard comes out. And that, imagine, will be a some kind of draft, I think, posted to the website. It's just the devil and the detail are in licensing. And not that I suggest you do anything different. I think we as professionals can figure it out. But when you're using words like probable and collectability, does that mean if you collect a dollar? Does that mean it's probable? And just the concern of having probable versus probable. And
this is kind of highly probable, it seems like a strange term, but I guess the one told me it was being used. There was some minor comments as you get to the end here. Few things to be careful on, but no big concerns.
Just to touch on maybe licenses just briefly. So in the discussion in October, we made a concerted effort to put a lot of drafting into the papers, partly just to give some visibility, but also because we're getting close to the end. So the board members also were able to see where we were going with things. And there's quite a bit of drafting in there, and there's quite a bit of examples. I think, you know, if you're tuning, please go and have a look and get a comment, please, you know, just let us know. We won't be publishing sort of a draft a la hedge accounting system and website. I think we're very much in our internal draft mode now. So we're really trying to refine and just to make sure that we can sort of go out in public. So that's where we are in our process now.
Two reasons for that, Bob. One is that we don't need to do it from the due process point of view, but keeping aside the due process, going beyond due process, the boards have done quite a bit in the past in terms of staff drafts that was a few months old. There were only three areas that have changed from the staff draft from that point in time. These areas that Natasha touched on, collectability, constraint, and the license. And the staff has been very conscious to bring those changes to the board in terms of every paper. And I think there are three alternatives to the thing, but I think the boards are a little worried about going through another staff draft, another table file review.
That's fine. And then look at the meeting. Just with licensing, you have one word wrong, you could have some draconian results. So just a little caution there.
Maybe if I can request Natasha after this meeting just to hand over the paper so that you have them ready so you can take a look.
Great. Yeah.
Thanks. Anything else? If not, thank you both. And we will have Professor Trina and Sarah to come on over.